You better work.
Discover our city's hidden gem, hiding right below the sidewalk. Underbar is a speakeasy-themed cocktail lounge located downtown Vancouver. As an LGBTQ-friendly and gay-owned space, it is a go-to destination for weekly events such as comedy, trivia, bingo, and open mic nights. Local artists are featured every first Friday of the month, and every fourth Sunday is Underbar's Underground Drag Brunch Show, 2 to 4 p.m. More information and location can be found at underbarvancouver.com. That's underbarvancouver.com.
Hey, this is Ricky Rocket from Poison, and you're listening to Hassling the Paranormal on KXRW 99.9 FM.
This is Hassling the Paranormal. I'm your host, Jason Hassler. I'm the director of Big River Paranormal, the Oregon team for the Atlantic Paranormal Society. I've been obsessed with the paranormal since having unexplained experiences as a child. These experiences left me with more questions than answers. Join me as we explore all things paranormal with some of the top specialists and experts in the paranormal community. For listening to Hassling the Paranormal, I'm your host, Jason Hassler. Today's guest is Ross Allison, and sitting in as well is Ben Robinson. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good. Enjoying the weather, that's for sure.
Nice hot weather.
Where are you at? Puyallup? Is that where you're at?
Yes. We're in Puyallup hanging out and getting ready to, barbecue some pork chops. Is that right, Ben?
Yeah, and we're going to use the chimichurri I made last night for the steaks to put on the pork chops tonight.
And that's all you've been thinking about all day, probably, huh? All right, Russell, let's start with how you got your interest in the paranormal.
Me? I've always been fascinated with ghosts, per se. It's one of those things that my mother loves ghost stories. So as a child, I would always hear her read to me some of the latest ghost stories that she came across. So for me, that was kind of the trigger for my fascination. So I always grew up wanting to watch all the latest ghost shows and read all the latest ghost books. So that's really what started it for me.
When did you start investigating?
I started investigating back in the early 1990s. Now, I could say I did some investigating in my teen years because I had gotten a hold of a Hon Holzer book and was learning about EVPs. And I remember sneaking off to a cemetery trying for EVPs as a teenager. But I really got more involved in the 90s, early 90s, when I was living in the Bay Area. I got to, hang out with some of the names out there, Lloyd and stuff like that, doing some of his lectures and classes.
So you had some mentorship and stuff like that when you first getting started?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely was. Like I said, I was always fascinated. I wanted to know, do people really experience this stuff? So I wanted to get involved. And you have to understand that when I started ghost hunting, it was not popular. Yeah. Most of us, would be in the closet. You didn't tell people you were ghost hunters because they pretty much think you were a whack job. So just as much as they think Ben is a whack job, but that's all right.
So what Ross is trying to say is that he had to come out of two closets?
So, yeah, it was just one of those things that I just was fascinated. I wanted to know, is there something to this? And I wasn't one of those people that had paranormal experiences. I was just envious of all those people that did. And so after I moved back to Washington, and this was 2000, I wanted to continue to do ghost hunting, and ghost hunting was not a thing. So there weren't any groups to get involved in. So I just decided, you know what? I'm gonna get a hold of a bunch of my buddies and check out a local cemetery down the street. But of course, all my friends, they wanted to hit the bars first,
Yeah.
then go ghost hunting. And I was just like, you know what? I don't need a bunch of drunks in the cemetery.
No.
So a friend of mine said, just start your own group, see what happens. And so I started a ghost, and we are the oldest ghost hunting group in the Pacific Northwest.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, what does a ghost stand for?
The Advanced Ghost Hunters of Seattle Tacoma.
So, when you go out on an investigation, what is the goal for your team?
Our goal is to basically try to pinpoint what seems to be occurring in most locations. I've always told people that when you get involved in the paranormal, you really have to go with what you know and not with what you think you know. So you have to strip things down to the simplest form. You know, I know a lot of people want to, go in and say, oh, well, you were pushed or bitten, so this must be a demon. So we're going to be looking for a demon and stuff like that. And you really have to push all that information to the side and just go with the basics. You know, okay, you were pushed. Okay, you were bitten. What other things can we, validate that might have happened? And you just kind of start your investigation from those locations and try to collect as much information as possible. You know, are we dealing with something that's intelligent? Is it responding to the environment? Is it responding to the living? If you know you're dealing with something intelligent, then you can kind of curve your investigation to see if you can get those responses. Is it just residual? Is it happening all the time at the same time? So it's important to actually get your clients to do journaling so you can see if there are certain things that are happening at a certain time. So that if it is residual, well, then obviously you want to be there around that time so you can capture that phenomena as well. So it's a little bit of, psychology. It's a little bit of, searching for the history. And it's a lot of sitting around patiently waiting for something to interact with you to validate these encounters.
Do you have mediums on your team, and how do you approach that?
I have worked with psychics. It's one of those things that I am, and this has gotten me in trouble quite a bit, is I'm a little more strict when it comes to those who might be psychic or sensitive. I want to make sure that we're protecting our credibility as a team, and we're also protecting their credibility if they're psychic or sensitive. When my team signs up for investigations, they don't know where they're going. They have no prior information. The only information we give them is if it's a private home or a business. That is it. Yeah, and it's one of those things that I really do want to keep everybody in the cold. The only other time they might know where they're going is if it's a public event that we're doing. It's a one-time thing. People have to pay. I can't expect people to pay for an investigation when they don't know what they're doing. So that's the only other time they might know what's going on. But otherwise, we're really strict about not having them know any information about these. And again, it's just it's nice that when somebody who could be psychic or sensitive and they hit those great hits that, you can't say that, oh, they had any prior knowledge of any of this stuff. So for me, it's a lot of, controlling the environment and having full control over the situation when somebody claims to be a psychic or
It seems like everybody's a psychic these days, so
sensitive. Well, it is. And I do believe sometimes we can have our psychic moments. As a kid, I was one of those. When I'd go visit my grandmother for the weekend, she was always forgetful and losing things. And as soon as I get to her house, she'd be always like, "Oh, I can't find something. I don't know what happened to it." And I would just know where it is. And it was just that was one of the things that I was kind of interested in. And I thought, "Oh, this is kind of spooky," but as I got involved in the paranormal field, I really have always been more focused on the science. I wanted more of a scientific approach. And so I kind of, I didn't want to say I'm psychic or sensitive, not at all. Like I said, I believe people have their moments, but it was something I never really pursued. And so it was just one of those things that I just really wanted to collect the data. and not put myself in a situation where I was always second guessing myself.
Talk about the process of paranormal investigations as far as like what people think it's, you know, it's not as seen on TV. What can people expect when they actually do the investigations themselves? That's not going to be like you see on TV.
Well, for one, it's a lot of question and answers. You know, as soon as somebody contacts us and is curious if they are, you know, experiencing paranormal phenomena, then we have to go through the interview process over the phone. And that's asking a lot of the questions, even sometimes tricking them and asking the same question in different ways to see if they answer the same way.
Yeah.
It's analyzing the situation. Can the stuff that they're, you know, telling us, could it be explainable? You know, you start the debunking process right away.
Yeah.
And then if you feel like you need to, that we can pursue and see what's going on, then we will set up a walkthrough. And this is where we'll come in with an extremely small team. It's usually two or three of us. And we'll go in and take control readings, control photos. We'll interview everybody there. And again, we're asking the same questions again to see if we get the same answers. And then we'll also map out the location and have a better idea of how the property looks. And so once we've, after that interview process and seen what the property is like and see again if there's ways we can debunk some of their experiences by being on the property itself, if we feel that there may still be something to this, then we will set up the investigation. And that will usually be, you know, 4 to 6 members, depending on the size of the property, will go in and actually do an investigation. And again, it's that process of, you know, taking control readings, control photos. Now we'll probably set up some experiments that might relate to the environment and the experiences that they have. And hopefully we get some results. And then, of course, we'll review everything after the investigation and submit everything to the clients. And hopefully we have some answers to what they might be experiencing.
What is the most logical explanation that you come across to help people understand what they're experiencing?
Well, a lot of it is when people do contact us, because of the popularity of ghost hunting, most people already have it in their heads that they're experiencing demons.
Yeah.
That there's something negative out to harm them. And there's even been a lot of situations where, unfortunately, there have been bad groups, I hate to say it, but were going around telling, you know, their clients that it was demons, and they would get their clients so terrified that they're in the middle of trying to, you know, sell their property. They want out.
Yeah.
And don't care about the financial, you know, issues that they're going to have to deal with. And so a lot of times we get called in and we're right in the middle of, you know, trying to talk them off the ledge. Because it's like, you know, I'm sorry you feel that this is what's happening to you, but let's start at the beginning.
Yeah.
All right. Let's put what they said and their claims, let's put that to the side. Let's see what's going on, you know, before you get so afraid that you need to, you know, disrupt your life to put yourself in so much financial trouble just to run away from something that might not be there.
Do you feel like the popularity of paranormal TV shows has hurt or helped the paranormal research field more?
It's a little bit of both. I want to say 50-50, but it's not really 50-50. It's more like, you know, it's more, yes, the popularity of ghost hunting has opened a lot of doors for us. We are now more accepted. It's not a situation where we're being constantly criticized by what we do. Most times we're being praised by what we do. But yes, the ghost hunting field through media attention has hurt us in a way that now everything is negative. Now people expect results every time you go out and investigate. Yeah. You know, now they think, you know, when they talk to me as a ghost hunter, they're like, oh my God, you got to be terrified every time you go out. Right. You know, you're putting your life at danger every time you go out. Why do you do that? You got to be so brave. And it's like, most of the time, this is so tame. You could probably fall asleep during an investigation. You know,
I'm not saying I haven't.
Yeah. But it's a situation where a lot of people would probably be bored doing what we do. Because it is a lot of sitting around waiting patiently for something to happen, and it doesn't always happen. Like most people see, you know?
How often would you say you run into something that you believe may be evil, or some people might believe demonic?
Well, I'm not saying that there's not evil, or I should say negative energy. I don't like to label anything evil, but I would say that, yeah, there is some negative energy out there. And I always put it this way. There's a lot of negative, and we can even say evil people in the world, you know? So who's to say that when they pass on, that energy doesn't carry on? It doesn't make them a demon. Yeah, so I always try to remind people that, yeah, there is some negative energy out there that you might experience. But nothing that I would say in all the years that I've investigated, and I've been doing this well over 30 years, that there's something out there to kill somebody, you know?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of that is just media pushes a lot of fear on people. And that's one of the biggest problems that we have a lot of times when people are calling us and wanting us to do an investigation. You know, they've already got it in their head that it's a demon, you know, that's something out to harm them. And a lot of times, sometimes it's our fear that triggers a lot of this stuff. And we always make it into something more than it actually is. As an example, I was called out to this elderly woman's house to do an investigation, and she was telling me stories that there's definitely something evil in her home. She would hear it in the middle of the night scratching on her walls, sometimes even she'd claim to hear a moaning sound and stuff like that. And it was terrifying her. And so I was like, okay, we set up our walkthrough. We were there. I'm sitting, you know, on the couch interviewing her as she's in her little, you know, rocking chair. And she's telling me the stories, and all of a sudden we hear scratching on the walls right behind me. And so, you know, she's freaking out. She's like, oh my God, there it is. Can you hear it? Can you hear it? And I'm like, yeah, I hear it. So I immediately go around the couch to try and get closer to the wall so I can see, you know, maybe it's a rat scratching in the wall or something. I'm not sure what it is. But as soon as I come around the couch, there's her dog leaning up against the wall, scratching himself.
Yeah.
And so that's the scratching noise she hears, is because his front paw is like scratching up against the wall as he's scratching himself. Wow. And so I bring this to her attention. I said, I don't think that this is a demon or anything trying to harm you. I think it's just your dog. When he leans up against the wall to scratch himself, he's making that noise. And she's like, oh, no, no, no. My dog doesn't scratch himself. And I'm just like, okay, you know, what is your dog doing then? And she proceeded to tell me that her dog was petting himself. Okay. So I was like, you know, don't call us, we'll call you type of thing, you know? Yeah.
So I heard Ben likes to pet himself as well.
That's a different show, man.
Yeah. But so, you were asking, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, what's your favorite paranormal TV show?
God, I don't know if I have any, to be honest with you.
Good answer.
You know, it's a situation where I watched them in the beginning. And when you find yourself constantly see them doing things so poorly.
Yeah.
And you're yelling at the TV and it's causing you anxiety. I just stopped watching them because it was too. The same stuff over and over and over again. It was just different teams, same locations, same stories. They just want to get reactions, you know, out of the investigators. And it was, to me, it was boring and frustrating because most of the stuff they were doing was just ridiculous.
Yeah. That's kind of where I'm at with it.
And so, I just stopped watching them altogether.
Not only that, I get pissed because they have a better budget than I do for equipment and travel. So, you
know. And it is frustrating. Me and Ben were just talking about this the other night. And it's just, you know, you see these people, you know, gain a much larger audience. And they're now considered the experts in the field.
Yes.
And they're not. You know, most of them are just entertainers. They have really no experience or knowledge, you know, when it comes to the paranormal. I won't say names, but, you know, there are people out there that have a big enough name, but yet they have ghostwriters to do their books.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of weird because, you know, like, you know, you get the most popular show, obviously, Ghost Adventures, which most of us in the paranormal field just laugh at because it's not real. And maybe when Zach started, he had the, you know, in the right place. I don't know. But money does the funny things. And when you're on TV, you have to be entertaining. So if they actually showed what we do most of the time, people would not watch.
Yeah, no, it would be pretty boring. But that's why we are in a situation now where most ghost hunters are now dependent on instant gratification.
Yeah.
So they're dependent on devices that give them that instant gratification. You know, like the ghost boxes, spirit boxes, you know, the ovuluses, so that they have some sort of interaction with, you know, with randomness is what I would say. So that's what's frustrating for me. And now I see ghost hunters go in with, you know, the spirit boxes and these other devices, and they claim to solve the mystery of what's happening in their home.
Yeah.
You know, just after sitting down with a ghost box for an hour.
What I always tell people is when you're sitting there with the ghost box or the ovulus or whatever piece of device that you spent way too much money on online, you're missing what's actually going on around you.
Oh, it is so annoying. I have been a guest investigator at some events. And of course, the team, you know, their team brings out the ghost box and starts a thing. And then it's so loud and annoying. It's kind of giving you that headache. But yet I'm trying to focus on what's going on in the room, the sounds around the room. And you can't because, these ghost boxes are disrupting the environment.
Yeah.
So they're not even paying attention to what's going on in the room most of the time. They're just focused on these random sounds that are coming out of these devices.
Yeah, they get pretty aggravating. But I mean, we have one, and the only time I bring it out is when we're doing public events and people are like, "Do you have a spirit box?" And then, well, of course, you know, because people want to play with what they see on TV. But I always tell them the truth about it. I never just say, "Hey, yeah, this is a ghost." I'm gonna be like, This is for entertainment purposes. You take it what you want with it, you can do, but it's for entertainment purposes. I'll ask this question to both of you here. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, if people wanted to claim that the ghost box was really speaking to spirit, you have to go to the root of the situation. You know, spirit boxes came from the idea that spirits could talk through dead radio stations.
Yeah.
You know, and the correct term is RVP, radio voice phenomena. All right. I'm going old school here, you know, I'm aging myself here, but that is actually the correct term. I know a lot of people call it EVPs and stuff. That is not an EVP. It's radio voice phenomena is what they are claiming to capture. And the thing is there was claims that they were hearing voices coming from dead radio stations. Now, this was not a situation where somebody was sitting in their car and turning the dial constantly talking to a ghost. This was just focused on a dead radio station asking questions, and they claimed that they'd hear a response. Now, something like that I'd be a little more open to, but of course, then along comes the spirit boxes, you know, and the Frank's boxes and all these other different versions of the same thing, of it cycling through all these different sounds as it's going through all the different stations. And I always said, well, if this is supposed to be spirit talking to us, then the best way to validate these experiences is we have to be recording every radio station on the air at that time. Then at the time you claim to get a sound or a response, we have to go to every one of those recordings of those stations and see what's playing at that time.
Yeah.
Could it have been when you asked, was, you know, tell me your name, and it says, you know, my name, or it says Joe, you know, for announcers on radio stations are constantly stating people's names. you know, or even their own name. Or when you ask, you know, how old are you? They're always calling out their call letters and numbers as well. So chances of getting a name or something in response and a number are pretty high when they're constantly saying those things on the shows. So if you can go through and not, you know, have something like that Joe coming through a recording or something that sounds like Joe, then you might have something there. But you it's a lot of work, a lot of hours to go through to try and validate yeah. that, and no one's willing to do it.
No.
You know,
I know I'm not.
Yeah. You know, but if somebody was going to try and make themselves dependent on spirit boxes, then they need to have something to back up their findings. And yeah. that's one thing that I've suggested. I said, then record all the stations and just go back to the time you got that recording and see if any of those stations was saying that word.
Yeah.
But no one wants to do it. You know,
it would be tough to do, but it would be a lot of work. One of the things that happens to me with.
Yeah, I do have to point out one other thing that yeah. people don't know this, but a lot of spirit boxes and other devices similar to that also pick up walkie-talkie.
Yeah.
So one of the hacks that they've been known to do to fool the audience is they could have another investigator another block away on a walkie-talkie, and they'll be listening in on the investigation. And of course, when they ask a question, you know, who do you want to talk to? And they'll quickly go on their walkie-talkie and go, Ben, 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 until it cycles through and they'll hear it say, Ben. So that's one of the things you have to be aware of. That is also a thing that they've hacked into.
I think we should do that. Next time we know, like, there's a certain team, you know, somewhere, we should go nearby with some walkie-talkie, see if we can freak these guys out.
I like it.
That might be fun. So I'll ask both of you, when you go into an investigation, do you do anything for yourself from a personal standpoint, maybe a religious or spiritual standpoint, to keep yourself safe?
Well, I'll let Ben go because I've been talking for a while.
Yeah, go for it.
Oh, all right. For me, it's a matter of just, you know, really making sure I'm in a good, you know, mental state. I don't have any kind of religious belief system. I don't dismiss, or I don't you know, tell people not to, you know, do what they feel is necessary to protect themselves. But I don't really do anything except for make sure I'm healthy mentally and physically. And that's all I do.
Yeah, that's very important. A lot of people don't even think about that. They you know, they like, because with my team, I always tell my team, you need to have a good night's sleep. You need to eat. Yeah. You need to be, you know, mm-hmm. be refreshed, be alive, you know, be ready.
Yeah. For me, I'm just always making sure that I'm being respectful.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm up against. And so I always thought it was weird that people would go in and be disrespectful to the spirit and try to taunt the spirit to make itself known. And it's like, well, if you don't know what you're really up against, why would you put yourself in that kind of danger? Because I'm thinking, you know, if I was the ghost and you came into my home and you were being disrespectful to me and my property, I'd be like, I'll get you. I'll probably get you when the cameras aren't on, but I'll get you, you know?
Yeah. Wait till you're sleeping tonight, buddy. Yeah.
There you go.
So I always tell people too, like, don't cuss out somebody's grandma.
There you go. They tend to forget that if we're really speaking to ghosts, these were once people, you know?
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense because, you know, I just tend to be the belief that they are people that have passed on, and then we should speak to them just like they're there in the physical world.
Exactly.
So let me ask about, so you have a very unique documentary, and I'm sure that some people have watched this, have seen it already or heard of it. Can you tell me what the focus of the documentary was and well, why, the documentary, how you got there? Yeah.
We have an award-winning documentary, Best Evidence and Best Documentary.
Okay.
It's called Parasense, The Naked Experiment. I'm the first to try and prove touch. When people claim that they've been touched by ghosts in various different ways, it can be very positive, it can be very negative as well. But when people have these sensations, it is such a personal experience. You know, how do you prove that something touched you? Yeah. You know, unless it leaves a physical mark, there's no proof. It's just your story, and I have to choose to believe it or not. And what happened was, this is many, many years ago. God, I think we're talking about, you know, almost 10 years ago. A young man had reached out to me because he was experiencing physical phenomena where something was groping him. And he said this happened after he had been working in an abandoned brothel. And he was putting up some sheetrock and, you know, taking care of a few leaks. And all of a sudden, when he was up there, something groped him.
Did and he have to pay extra for that?
Yeah, I know. he said then it followed at home, followed him home. And so he kept having these sensations. One time it happened in the shower. One time it happened in the bed. So he was having these sensations. Now, this is not the first time I've heard this. You know, we've all heard of, you know, the entity case back in the 70s, which was more physical. But for me, I was just like, gosh, you know, I would love to believe this guy. But how do I prove this? Yeah. You know, and it's such a personal thing, too. And I got to thinking, I was just like, gosh, you know, people are being touched out there. How do I prove that? I just have to accept their stories. And it really got me thinking. I was just like, okay, you know, well, maybe there's been some experiments out there that have tried to prove touch. And so I did some digging and I couldn't find anything because I was hoping that there would be something out there maybe that would inspire me to, you know, develop some new experiments to see if we can validate this, especially as technology is constantly changing almost on a daily basis. So I figured, you know, maybe there's something I could do, something affordable that we could try and run some cool experiments. And there was nothing. And so I found myself starting from scratch. Like, okay, if somebody's being touched, you know, what can I do? And so I came up with all these various different experiments. And one that we're expanding on is one of my favorites called the puppet. And this is where I took elastic string and I attached it to the various sensitive parts of the body. Now, one of the things that I forgot to mention is the subjects are naked. Okay. And I know a lot of people always ask why naked. And if you're trying to prove touch, you really need to see what's happening to the physical body. You know, is there happening anything, you know, pressure on the skin, you know, the muscles? Is there, you know, anything that could be, you know, visual for us? Yeah. But also too, if you're wearing a shirt and you tell me that, oh, I just felt something tap me on my shoulder. Anybody who's a skeptic or even in the scientific field is going to say, well, that's contaminated. You're wearing a shirt. It could have been your shirt. And so nudity just kind of made sense. You know, it was nothing to be sexual or anything like that. It's just we needed the true raw data. We had to be as transparent as possible. So if I was able to get people willing to just sit alone, naked, in a room where physical phenomena is happening, maybe I could validate some of these experiences. And so as I was talking about with the puppet, I came up with this idea of just taking this elastic string and, you know, and attaching it, you know, with surgical tape, you know, to the inside of the arms, you know, the inner thighs, the back of the neck, just, you know, other various, very sensitive parts of the body. And I'd stretch that elastic string to the other side of the room. And attach it to a different part of the room. So you have like this, you know, this nervous system being expanded out into the room. So I thought, you know, if anything passes through, let's say if something was to walk through these strings, you know, would it give off a tugging sensation or a vibration? And would you be able to feel it? And I thought, well, if that's the case, you know, maybe, you know, this could increase their sensitivity and see if there's something going on around them. And sure enough, people started having these experiences. They were feeling the sensations happening. And so I was like, okay, great. There's something here. I need more. This is not enough, you know, just to say, oh yes, yeah, so here's proof of the paranormal. And me being more scientific minded, I knew that this was not enough to just put this out in the public and say, hey, here's a great experiment. Here's proof that ghosts are, you know, walking around you.
Yeah.
So I reached out to a gentleman, Chad Goodwin, and he was a scientist, and he had me on his show. He was doing you know, a science talk radio show, and just wanted my perspective, you know, on spooky stuff and ghosts and all that stuff. And we had talked a few times about some of the ideas that I had rolling around in my head that would might help us in the paranormal field. And he loved it. He was like, oh, this is great. You know, I'm kind of fascinated with what you're doing. This is cool. But we weren't able to connect. We were, you know, he was busied with other projects and stuff like that. And so once I got to the point where I was doing these experiments and I needed more, data. I needed something to help me validate these experiments. I decided to reach out to him. And just kind of, I wasn't, you know, really trying to pull him in to be a member of my team, but I just wanted him some guidance from him. I was like, you know, am I doing this right? What do you suggest I could do to make this better? You know, things like that I was hoping for. And he was really fascinated with what I was doing. So I invited him. I said, you know, we're going out to Northport. This is where that young man has been, you know, being fondled, and we're going to do some experiments. You willing to come out and just observe, you know, see what we're doing? And so he agreed. So he came out with me. He watched what I was doing and he was like, this is pretty amazing, Ross. And he's like, do you mind if I do an experiment? And I was like, sure, I'd love to have you do an experiment. I was thinking he was just going to, you know, in his clothes, sit there and, you know, and do an experiment that we had set up. But no, he decides to actually get naked and do the full experiment. And I was floored by this. I was just like, really? You're going to go to that level? And he's like, yeah. He's like, I need to know what it is that these people are feeling. And if I have an idea of what they're feeling, then I could have a better idea of how to record that information. Yeah. And I was like, this is what we need. This is exactly what I've been looking for. Somebody willing to put themselves out there. And he was. And he did a few experiments. He had his own personal experiences. And he's been a member of my team since.
Wow.
So yeah. So we've just been going around doing various different experiments. He's helped me to develop more high tech gear to help us record the environment as to what's going on. One amazing thing that we captured, and I know Ben can validate this, he actually saw the documentary for the first time, was a scratch.
Yeah.
One of the things that we do when we set up our experiment is right before they sit down and they're alone in the room, we look over their body to make sure there's no scratches or any blemishes or anything that might be, you know, what they could point out as, oh, the ghost did this to me.
Yeah.
We just want to make sure that there's nothing there. And if there is there something there, we can document that, say, okay, that's there. Maybe that was a pimple, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
We can, you know, document all that stuff, any blemishes on their body. And so we do that every time before they sit down for their experiment. There's cameras on them 360. So we can see all the way around, see what they're doing. And at the end of the experiments that we did at Brushy Mountain Prison, this young man had a bleeding scratch on his arm. It wasn't there before the experiment. It only happened during the experiment.
Wow.
And I was just fascinated by this because we captured this on camera. And what made this even more exciting is at the time that we believe he got scratched, we picked up with our Spectre system. This is the new system that we had put together. And this stands for Special Paranormal Environmental Controlled. Special Paranormal Energy Computer Tracking Research Equipment. So
it's a mouthful. Yeah,
it is. But anyways, we have all these different sensors that monitors a 360 around the subject. And sure enough, at the moment that we believe he got scratched, you can actually see through the data, something came out of nowhere, approached the subject, and then left.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's really fascinating. I mean, just to enter, you know, Jack here real quick, what he's got going on is groundbreaking. And that's exactly what we want to see in this field, because he's getting so much, not only visual, but then he's getting that hard data as well, and they're collecting it, and it's backing these experiences. So I mean, that's where we need to be going.
Yeah.
So you said you're about to do a part two. What is going to be different, or is it just going to be more continuation and see if you can follow up with the same stuff?
Well, when it comes to science, it's always a learning experience. It's a system that's constantly growing and changing. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to show people how the science works. You know, when you start with such a primitive experiments like the puppets, where can we take it further to validate these experiences? And so that's what we're trying to do with, and we're hoping this will be a series. You know, it's a long time in the making, because, you know, Chad is a real scientist. You know, right now he's working on energy projects in Africa. So we have to really work on around his schedule. But when we have these opportunities, you know, we're constantly advancing, and we want to show people how some of these experiments evolve. And so that's one of our goals with the second one, is we're really fascinated with the puppet experiments, because we've gotten some interesting results. People are experiencing something with it. Now, what can we do to validate that?
Yeah.
You know, so that's where we're trying to add more technology to the experiments. And so plus he's also upgrading the spectra system with new sensors, and he's got some experiments that he wants to bring to the table. So it is exciting. And one of the things is, you know, we want to continue the story as we're moving forward with this, because it's all trial and error when it comes to, you know, trying to prove the paranormal. You can't expect the ghost to respond every time you go out.
No.
You may believe a place is extremely haunted, but just because it's extremely haunted doesn't mean every time you go in, you're going to have all those extremes, you know?
Yeah, they're certainly not circus performers. Yeah,
exactly. So it's a lot of going into places and doing the repeating of these experiments. Hopefully you get the results.
Where can people see your original video, Parasense, The Naked Experience?
It is actually, it's on Amazon. You can check it out on Amazon. So there's a few other outlets, streaming outlets you can look up. I forgot what they are, but definitely Amazon. Everybody's got Amazon. So, yeah. So you can definitely check it out. It's out there for everybody to see.
I watched it when it originally came out. I'm going to have to go back and watch it again for sure.
Oh, I hope you enjoyed it the first time around.
Yeah. How did you get people to volunteer for that?
That was a tough one. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. It was a situation where I had to show my credibility. Yeah. You know, this was not, you know, being sexualized or, you know, just being a pervert to see a bunch of naked people. This was a situation where I had to prove to people that what we're trying to do is real. You know, you're kind of being a part of history, you know, especially if you have that unique experience that, you know, people are going to witness, you know, the science happening in front of their eyes. So it was a lot of that. And I found that it was more, easier to convince people once they saw some of the experiments that I had done and showed them the results, and, you know, showed them that, you know, yes, I'm a real ghost hunter. You can look me up. I've written 12 books. I've been on all the shows. So once they realized that I was, you know, legit, it was a little easier to get people to step up. Right, Ben?
Yes, sir.
So, yeah, Ben's going to ask for a much bigger blur than he actually needs.
Well, I got to throw the audience. I got to throw the audience off.
Right. You know, it'll be easier to at least give him a couple pixels.
Yeah. I mean, Ben's single now. You can't do him dirty like that. Right on. Well, so when is the second part going to be out? Do you have any idea, or is this kind of an idea?
We don't. You know, to be honest, we don't want to be under pressure where we're trying to force it, you know, like a lot of television shows do, or streaming, you know, shows do. It's just like that. Oh, you know, it's due date. We have to have something out every Thursday.
Yeah.
We don't want to do that. We just want to, you know, hopefully when we go out and do these investigations, hopefully there's a story to tell. And if there is, we'll throw it in the documentary. Hopefully there's evidence to show. And if there is, we'll throw it in the documentary. So once we get enough material out there and we have this amazing story to add on to our origin story, we consider the first one our origin story, then, you know, we'll put it out there. We have gotten, I think we have enough material that we're about halfway there. We just need one more location that's just going to give us some great results. I think that's what we're looking for right now. And to show the changes that we've made as we progress.
Yeah. Right on. So if people want to know more about you, how do they find information?
I always direct people to Facebook. That's probably the one of the only social media outlets that I am a little more active on. You can also check out our website at aghost.org. And then, of course, all my books are out there, too, on Amazon. You can definitely check out my books.
Right on.
I'm out there. You can just look up Ross, a ghost, and you can find me.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, guys. And it was good chatting with you.
Thank you.
You bet. Anytime.
The Columbian and Southwest Washington continues to offer the most comprehensive and consistent coverage of our region and our people, despite the challenges faced by local newspapers nationwide. Valued donations to our community-funded journalism project via the Local Media Foundation pays for local reporters to provide expanded and in-depth coverage of key local issues in print and online, including homelessness, transportation, and the environment. For the most thorough daily coverage, visit Columbian.com. Please consider donating or subscribing today.
Support for KXRW Vancouver comes from On Point Removal Services. On Point Removal Services is a Vancouver, Washington-based junk removal service that proudly serves all of the Clark County area and beyond. Offering residential, office, and construction junk removal, On Point will do all of the loading, pickup, hauling, and cleanup on your project. And On Point is fully licensed and insured. For more information, visit their website at onpoint-removal.com.
Shriners Children's has opened a new pediatric orthopedic clinic in Vancouver. The clinic offers evaluation and follow-up care for children and teens with orthopedic conditions, including sports-related injuries. Care is available regardless of a family's ability to pay. Details about the Vancouver Clinic are at shrinerschildrens.org/Vancouver Clinic.
KXRW programming is made possible by partners like Buckley and Associates, attorneys at law, helping injured victims seek the justice they deserve for over 40 years, licensed in Washington State. Our diverse team speaks over 7 languages, making your rights more accessible and easier to understand. Learn more at BuckleyLaw.net. Again, that's BuckleyLaw.net. Buckley & Associates. We speak your language.
Baby, get it right. Peter Pan man,
Romeo and Juliet. On that starry, starry, stormy night.
You've been listening to Hassling the Paranormal on KXRW 99.9 FM. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll tune in next time.
Ha 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 ha